you got a mailing that says this is a very special offer for you, a woman like you.
Joe Bryant, an invitation especially for a remarkable woman like you. But I'm gonna find. Don't let them make up your mind. Dear Joe Bryant, we created all you for real women like you. We understand your daily challenges, how to find quick balance meals to feed your family. I started thinking, you know, I do that. Clothes that are flattering and affordable. No.
Don't work too hard on that.
Realistic ways to get fit and boost your health. Basically, it's an invitation for a woman's magazine. But it's specifically to me, and I tried to think, what do I do that you know, targets me as a woman?
You look good walking away, I can tell you that.
Who sold my name to these people?
What, as a woman.
Yeah, what have I done that got me on a here's a remarkable woman list that might want your magazine?
I have no idea, Joe.
I feel a little...
Now, you do cross-dress in our Dear Flabby poster. Do you cross-dress? Are you on a mailing list someplace where you bought some women's clothes?
No, I can't...
Did you buy your wife something sexy and... fill out a customer card?
Not that I know of. I have.
How could you buy something sexy for your wife and not know of it?
Well, I used to buy her pajamas. I never got, but that was years ago. I quit buying them because I was having a hard time sizing her. Not in width, but in length. She's a really petite, so she needs special sizes. So I have just about quit buying her anything like that.
Have you donated to a charity like a breast cancer research or something like that? Your Susan B. Komen, your Walk for the Cure?
I plan to attend the benefit next month for Susan B. Komen, but I haven't.
But you're paranoid that you're on some mailing lists as a woman now.
Well, obviously I am a remarkable woman, not just any woman.
You are a remarkable woman.
Yeah. I mean, this
Maura,
is
do you get this stuff, right?
I do, yeah. 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 I don't remember being referred to as remarkable, though.
No. I know. I feel a little special, but at the same time, I feel a little concerned.
Well, let's find out if you're the only guy. Is there any other guy listening who has been called a remarkable woman by a male piece?
Or got something that was totally not targeted
totally
to you.
Totally not targeted to you. Totally inappropriate.
But obviously is targeted to me. It's got my name right on it.
1-800-252-1025.
So somewhere, somebody sold me off.
As a woman.
Yeah.
What's your middle name, Joe? It's not Marie.
No, it's Wade. It's even, and Joe could be a male or female name, but it's spelled J-O-E. I haven't met any J-O-E women.
This reminds me of the time that we had a goldfish. Remember a goldfish, Goldie?
Goldie O'Neill.
We were trying to demonstrate that it was super easy for anybody to get a credit card, and so we asked listeners to fill out comment cards and use Goldie O'Neill as the reply, and we started getting junk mail for Goldie O'Neill because we put him on all of these websites and all of these timeshare presentations, things like that. And sure enough, Goldie O'Neill, our goldfish, got offered a platinum card with how much credit? Do you remember?
$10,000.
$10,000 for a goldfish.
She rifled through it too, pretty quick. Remember that?
You did not.
Oh, I did. Okay.
I do a lot of the grocery shopping. I thought maybe groceries, but I don't buy the feminine stuff. I mean, I buy the food, a lot of the food.
You don't buy the feminine stuff?
No.
You refuse to buy that feminine
stuff? I don't refuse. I just have never, it never makes the list.
Hard to size her up?
Hard to size her. JC, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
I guess you want my story.
That would be one reason to possibly talk to you, yes.
No, that'd be great.
Okay.
Well, somebody has used my email address in their bio for Match.com, and it's a woman that's used my email address, so I'm getting all of these invitations and winks and all of these notices from guys all over saying they'd like to meet me for coffee and such.
Someone set you up as a dateable woman.
Yes, I'm like, I think it's Bella 1497 or something like that.
Have you responded to any?
No, and in fact, I've tried to get through to Match.com to get me off of there, but I guess it's easier to get on there than it is to get off of there, so I'm just kind of stuck with it for now.
Did you make somebody mad? Was this malicious, or was this just by chance?
Well, with the email address I have, I don't see it being very by chance. I have a feeling somebody's pulling a practical joke on me, but...
What's your email address?
Are you Bella1497?
No, I'm not. I'm definitely not Bella.
So they said that's where you are. Okay. Well, JC...
I more resemble Joe than a Bella.
Okay.
JC, I would go with this if I was you. And just go with it. Just write to him.
Somewhere's a lonely billionaire with about 2 months left to live.
Get him all excited.
Nearsighted.
Well, my girlfriend's kind of upset about it. She thinks I'm trying to cheat.
Right. That'll happen. My wife sees spam and goes, "You ordered this?" I go, "No, I didn't order that. It says, because it always says your order is ready
right.
for the Cialis or whatever it is." And they always misspell Cialis. It's got like, instead of an I, it's got like a...
S-E-E-A-L-I-C-E.
Right.
Sure.
You know what JC could do? I always wondered if he could do this and get away with it. They do it from other countries. Just pose as a woman online and say, "I need airfare to bring myself out there." They send you the airfare and then you never come, right? That happens.
Yeah, lonely guys are poached like that.
Yeah. Mary in Tacoma, your son has been pitched as what?
He is 14 years old and he just got his... ARP membership card in the mail, the one for senior citizens.
AARP.
Nice. Yes.
The American Association of Wrinkled Persons.
Yeah.
They're trying to get away from that.
Yeah.
They're calling them dried plums now. Okay, thank you. That's funny. Wayne in Seattle, have you been mislabeled on a mailing list?
Oh, yeah. I get it for, there's some Latina woman magazine. It's all in Spanish. And it's sent, for me, for the Latina woman like me, and it's because of my last name that I think that they get the whole Latina thing, but, I'm Filipino-Irish, and so they pretty much got it wrong every way you could possibly think of.
But they think you're a woman, so you can relate to what Joe's going through.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I get them like every, 6-7 months, I'll get one of those in my mail, and it's like, circular file.
I'd like to see your and Joe's underwear drawers because that would confirm my theory about the both of you.
Potpourri.
No, that would be a bit too much therapy for you guys to go through.
All right, thank you, Wayne.
Swing back something or other.
Ryan.
I get Farm Show magazine, but I assume somebody gave me that as a gift subscription.
Farm Show.
I like it.
Hey, hello, Ryan.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, I somehow got on Victoria's Secret's mailing list, and I get these flyers in the mail with coupons for free bras and panties. And it's addressed directly to me. And, my boys being teenagers, they always pick it up and say, "Dad, are you going to go get your free bra or whatever today?" And it's like, it gets a little annoying, but I don't know how I got on the list.
Have you tried to go and cash one in?
Well, no, but I try to give it to my wife, so that she can go and get the benefits. But, no, I haven't done anything.
She doesn't want to go in as you.
Ryan. Yeah.
After her free bra.
If Cantrell.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Can understand, exactly. Ryan. Thank you. Wow, this is rampant. Joe, I don't think it's just got to be random. They must assume you're a woman, even with a man's name. Scott, hello.
Hi.
Yes, Scott.
Yeah. I got 6 emails in one day, 3 of them for Enzyte and 3 of them from some other company for breast enlargement. So I don't know what list I got on, but they can't seem to figure out which gender they think I am.
Well, do you like large breasts?
I do, but not...
Well, do you have the cash available? Because it's a tough
right.
market.
Well, but Joe doesn't get the breast enlargement ones because he's already a remarkable woman.
Yeah,
thank you.
Well, and I don't count email because that's free. That's just spam. Anything can... But this is somebody paid for my name, and they got ripped off, frankly. I mean, somebody sold me as a remarkable woman.
Malaine.
Yes.
You're on.
Well, we live in rural Pedro Woolley, Washington, and all of a sudden we started receiving the Ebony magazine.
Oh, man.
I don't know how or why.
You should have got Ivory magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who would have ordered us the Ebony magazine, but it's quite funny.
Have you learned anything?
Well, I haven't looked at it. My boyfriend picks it up, and... He glances through it occasionally.
That's funny. Thank you. Here's Terry in Kirkland, who not only is misidentified, but he's nominated for an award. Terry?
Hi, Bob.
Yes, sir.
How you doing today?
Okay, but not as good as you.
No, yeah, I was nominated for a Women in Business Award.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice.
I almost went and showed up just to see what they would do.
What was it exactly?
It was just an achievement through my business.
Because you'd done great as an extraordinary, remarkable businesswoman. We've nominated you for this award. Was there a catch? They wanted money out of you or something?
No. It was just a Women in Business Award. I was nominated, I think, through my business, Costco, but they just went with it because my name's Carrie.
Got it. And did you do anything?
No, I didn't do anything. I thought about showing up to the event just to see what they were going to do, but I never did. I couldn't get... I guess I didn't have the balls.
Long way to go for that.
How prestigious is this award if they can award it to someone with a penis?
That's a good question. I never thought about it that way. I was probably more embarrassed than they would have been if I'd have showed up.
Yeah, I would think so. It would have been fun, though. Imagine going there.
Women in Business Award.
With your certificate in hand.
With your certificate in drag, looking like that Bud Light commercial.
Right. Hi, girls. I don't feel fresh. I don't know about the rest of you.
Be great. All right. Well, there you go, Joe. Well, you're not going to do anything, right? This is a great magazine, it looks like.
I don't think so.
It'll tell you how to drop 10 to 15 pounds in a month.
The first two or three things, I said, you're right.
Avoid that.
Yeah, why they
weight loss dreams come true.
I know, I could use all that, but then it gets into makeup and, how to chase men and stuff like that. I don't need any of that.
Chase men.
Locally, hard decisions are being made in our state, in Olympia, and the complaints are coming in after the state Senate released its version of the budget yesterday. Reductions would eliminate more than 10,000 slots for students at colleges and university, close the McNeil Island prison. Where would those people go? And a juvenile detention center could result in up to 8,000 layoffs among state employees and educators. And Adam Glickman is with the Service Employees International Union. He's feeling a little bitter.
I don't know what it says about Senate Democrats' values when they treat their lowest wage workers the worst.
Budget would eliminate pay increases for state workers and teachers and require them to pay more for their health care benefits.
What could we eliminate? I mean, boy, it looks awful when you say we're going to close the place where we put the worst sex offenders. We're going to, take away all the money from the schools. It looks like they picked the worst things. But when I think about it, what in our state is gravy? I mean, we're going to close.
Where's the gravy?
Yeah, where's...
Yeah. Government. Slash all their salaries in half.
Well, they're doing that. They're going to lay off a bunch of people. They're going to cut health care for 45,000 state employees. Can we, just close Mount Rainier or something? I mean, something big, one big thing?
Mount Rainier does not really cost that much to open,
oh,
Joe.
Okay.
It's a mountain. It sits
there.
It's so there.
Big. It seems like it would cost a lot.
I think it's a great idea. If you ask what should be closed and what is gravy, what is wasteful, what is excess, mm-hmm. I don't have an answer. Do you have an answer?
Already built the stadiums. Those are pretty much past,
And those bring in revenue.
They do bring in revenue.
That's why they were talked into being built.
Teachers bring in revenue, too. They make a smarter populace. That's better
but
educated
that's slower.
And better earning.
Just close schools for a year. No school for a year.
I think I know one little girl.
I don't want sex offenders running around.
Who would vote for that?
Well, the sex offenders, there's a new prison that these guys are all going to be sent to. The thing about McNeil is that it costs so much to bring the staff there and back every day. Being on an island, that's why the cost of McNeil is almost twice what it costs to keep an inmate somewhere else.
Makes sense.
So the closing McNeil to just lower the cost of inmate care.
All right, what's the fat?
Yeah,
what should we close? Remember that, and no matter what you close, you're putting people out of work, they're unemployed, their house gets foreclosed on, the spiral continues.
Yeah, but teachers.
I'll take suggestions from listeners. I think everybody should keep their job.
Well,
the state can't print money the way the federal government can.
When I see a road crew digging on the side of the road, at least three of the guys aren't working. of the four that are standing there, three of them aren't doing anything. Maybe just one of those guys instead of a teacher.
1-800-252-1025. Linda, the road crew guy who isn't working, we should have someone just drive around.
You!
And fire them.
Yeah. Leaning
That's
on
a good
the shovel.
Start. 1-800-252-1025. Linda in Renton. Oh, this is a tough one, Linda. Oh, and her cell phone died. All right, I'll give you her answer. She says we should cut all funding for art. We pay for art.
You know, we've got a lot of it. We could just hold on to what we've got for a while. I mean, I hate to...
Stop funding for art for a year.
We could put all our art on Craigslist. We could take it even another step further. We could take the hammering man and put it in whoever will pay the most big backyard. Bill Gates would stick that thing up on.
5-ton peanut rock outside of Quest Field. Those steel salmon on the way to Issaquah.
Can you imagine a place that had no art, no sculpture, no music, no... anything like that, our world would be...
Yes, Idaho.
If it's that or a place with no teachers, I'll take the teachers.
They call them starving artists. They're used to it.
Yeah. I mean,
All right, that's one. Ken in Bothell, hello.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
My thought is maybe we should cut the funding for illegal aliens to go to school in this country and maybe health care.
So we should take children of illegal aliens, because they're citizens, right?
Illegal aliens.
It's children. Their children are not illegal. Their children are actually citizens. Correct, Pedro?
Yeah, most of them are born here. Mm.
So the illegal aliens aren't the ones going to school. They don't, like, break into America to get to a good elementary school. That's not how it happens. See what I'm saying?
Well, if they're illegal aliens, why are we funding their education at four-year colleges in this?
Okay, well, maybe some of them... do they break into here for a good college, Pedro?
Some of them do, but they work very hard to pay for that college.
Right, they work extremely hard, but we should, like, cut their... are we giving them free college? I never
English
heard of that either.
English is a second language kind
of subsidized college.
I haven't heard of the illegal alien scholarship.
I mean, I
scholarship.
Don't mind helping out people like Pedro who worked and...
But all of them work.
...loopholes to get to this country, but...
All right, let's zero in on what you mean, because there's probably some funding for illegal aliens that you really do want to cut, but you don't really know what it is, right?
Precisely.
All right, someone will call with that. Thank you, Ken. We got to get someone to pick up that baton who actually knows a little.
Well, basically, there are, like, scholarships for minorities, and some illegal aliens apply for that. That's true.
And but they can get them.
Yeah, of course.
But those are scholarships. That's already money that's been donated. It's not, like, coming out of the treasury.
No, it is coming out of the treasury, because they had to cut 10,000 spaces in state universities yesterday as part of the budget, too.
In that case, you're also talking about other minorities, not only legal aliens. You're talking about blacks. You're talking about other minorities. Right, Spike?
That's true, but if they're legally citizens of the state, that's one thing. If they're illegal immigrants to this country, there shouldn't be any benefits for them.
And that would have no cost to us?
It would save us a ton of money, picking up the medical bills.
That's not the question I asked, but all right.
So my lawn will be a little overgrown. Big deal.
For more white people with blue eyes to screw the economy. Yeah.
That's right.
Speaking of lawns, let's just not mow the federal buildings and water their lawns and flowers for a
Let
while.
Goats do the job
there
for
you
a while.
Go.
All right. Onward we go. Jim and Snohomish. Phones are jammed. Jim and Snohomish, go ahead. What's the fat? What should we cut? Before we let sex offenders go free. What do you want to cut?
Make a little drive to Olympia and look at how many buildings filled with how many people are down there doing administrative jobs and supporting those administrative jobs. They're the most expensive in the state, and they are not delivering direct services. And if you ask the average voter, I bet you they'll say, we don't want to pay for administration, we want to pay for direct service. You clear that out down there, and I guarantee you, you'll save millions and millions, if not billions. Because they're keeping all of the administration down there, and they're cutting direct services. And basically what it is a legalized way to extort money from people by saying, well, you know, things are going to get dangerous here. And then when something goes wrong in the community, like with the sex offenders or something like that, what they're going to do is they're going to say, well, see, you should have given us more money. Now maybe you'll give us more money. It's a way of pointing a gun at the voter's head.
I'm scared, Jim.
What are these administrators? I mean, I know they're kind of pushing paper around, but don't they? They must have a purpose.
Well, let me help a little, because I kind of agree with Jim. A lot of state stuff is still done with paper, and it's not automated, and they've never got updated systems. But those updated systems cost, guess what? Money. And it's actually an upgrade to make it more efficient, which they've never done because it preserves some old jobs that sort of sit there. And paperwork through the state is so slow. If you're waiting for a title or something, you got to be months and months. And so I think you got a point, Jim, but it would need a real efficiency expert, because it's already inefficient as it is. And if you take people away, it'll be even more inefficient.
Well, the thing is, it's inefficient because they aren't doing things like, and there's a secretary for each department down there, and the secretary of the department reports to the governor. Does the secretary really have to be in Olympia? Can't they take in conference via phone?
Secretary can be in OMAC or even India if you want to completely outsource.
Welcome to the Olympia Capitol building.
But the truth is, they don't need a physical presence, and they don't need all of the personnel to make a physical presence in Olympia in order to get their little piece of the pie.
You do realize, Jeff, that anyone you let go goes on unemployment, which means they're paid by who?
They're paid by us.
Right, unemployment insurance, actually, which we pay, which is running out, and Obama has to pay for that. And then and anyone you let go, maybe get their house gets foreclosed on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing is, those people are also at higher risk because they're not delivering direct services.
Got it.
You want in a business sense, do you want to keep the guys that are making the widgets or the guys that are sitting up top telling people how? I mean, it's AIG just in a different suit.
Thank you, Jeff. Ben, hello.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
All right.
Hey, why close the prisons down? Why don't we just make them prisons like they used to? I mean, these are gymnasiums and cable
right.
TV. They got more rights in the prisons than we have on the outside working for a living.
So make prison really uncomfortable.
I'm
for that.
Prison so they don't want to go back there, you know? I mean, half these prisoners are in there. They get out. They want to go back. Where can you go and get free medical, room, board, gymnasium, library, everything you want?
Cuba.
Dad's house.
Guantanamo.
Gizmo.
Dad's house. Okay.
A little more Shawshank in our prison. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Next up is John in Lakewood. Hello, John.
Hey, how you doing, man?
All right.
I got to know on the, first of all, that collecting for the money, as far as getting money back into the United States, I think we should go around and start collecting all the money from these other countries
right. That
we've helped out, bailed out.
Well, but we've destroyed their economies too, by the way, so there's no money to collect from them.
Yeah, well, haven't we?
You foreclose on the other countries and take them over and become like the British Empire? Is that what we should do?
If it's possible.
Yeah, let's just take over the world. Okay, thanks for the call.
Yeah, wait.
We're going to come right back, because the phones are absolutely jammed.
Good.
The services that they're talking about cutting in the state are a sex offender prison on an island, because it's expensive to run. They're not going to let the sex offenders just
go.
No,
they're just going to move them somewhere.
Okay, guys.
They're going to move them
to North Bay. Raise your right hand. Get it out of your pants. Raise your right hand.
I promise I'm touching little kids.
Okay, off you go.
We'll be back with more of your ideas to trim the fat. All right, the state budget is out of control. They're trying to cut it in various ways. And the big headline in the news, of course, is that they're closing a sex offender prison on an island. Well, nobody likes that idea, but I like sex offenders. I like that the idea that they would have to not just escape, but swim to freedom.
Yeah, once you cover the surrounding water with piranhas, then by all means.
Yeah. But, okay, so back to the phones. We're asking you, where would you cut the budget? Some very interesting answers. Jeff is in Kent. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
My suggestion would be, and I hate on the prison system, but it would be to clean out death row.
Kill people on death row.
Well, I mean, if they're scheduled to die, you know, Tuesday. You know, if you got sentenced to death row on Wednesday, congratulations, you've got 6 days left.
Okay.
Kind of expedite the appeal process. Please, no. Have a nice trap door in the floor with an alligator underneath them.
Now, this would sound great to most people, except that did you happen to see recently a 60 Minutes episode about how many innocent people are being killed on death row?
No, sir, I haven't. And I do know that there's a due process, but there's some people that have been on there for 13, maybe 14 years.
Yeah, this particular show I saw, a guy had been on there for 11 years, and DNA evidence proved that he, in fact, didn't rape the woman, and they had this heartwarming show about he and the woman who accused him of rape are now friends. Right. But tough economic times call for tough measures, right?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's an exorbitant amount. And, Greg, you know, there are going to be some that would be, you know, caught up in the mix, but...
That's our system of justice. You occasionally get a guilty, get an innocent guy and kill him. That's just the price of freedom.
In case you don't know, when a guy admits to a crime, when he confesses to a crime, he's required by law. The state says we have to appeal the sentence. It's required that you appeal every death sentence. Some of those can just be expedited.
Right.
It's
actually cheaper to have him life in prison. Maybe we should just commute and get rid of the death penalty and save the money on all those appeals.
You know, another suggestion would be, I see a lot of state patrols and sheriffs that seem to stand around the neighborhood. Maybe we could give them hack license.
Thank you.
While you're patrolling, pick up a fare.
All right. So many good ideas, so we're going to race through them a little bit. John in Lake Taps, go ahead.
I think we should only print our government forms in English. You know, if you can't read and write English,
go home. All right, thank you.
I was at the DMV last week, and there are 9 different flavors of your driver's handbook: Russian, Chinese, Thai, Vietnamese. I mean, it's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. We've got this country. It's ours. We're white. We have blue eyes. Get out. Okay? There's a theme to all of
that. My folks had to learn English when they got here from Pennsylvania. They had to learn English.
Okay. Steve in Kirkland, hello. This is the first one I agree with. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I think we should cut the fat off the war on weed, you know, and then just decriminalize it and use the proceeds to pay for all those sex offenders.
Legalized pot.
There's movement in that way.
There's lots of movement that way. Mm-hmm. Obama doesn't want to quite go there yet.
Yeah. I don't know why he's sitting there. I'm getting stoned right now.
You think?
No, he's in London right now.
President Obunga.
Thank you, Steve. Steve didn't think it through, but that's okay.
Well, I'm waiting for the first dispensary to open here. I really think it's coming.
John in Woodinville, hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yeah, how do you cut the fat?
I do believe that... we offer every office that the state runs up for bidding and privatize it, because being a business owner myself, I'm very motivated to be efficient and be profitable. Where, I don't know, maybe it's only me who strolls into state agencies and I look at these people who really don't care whether they help me or not. And they get paid whether they do a good job at what they do or not. And driven by profit, I have actually lost employees who have gone to state agencies, and I'm not going to say which ones, but they told me, they said, after I left you, I all but stopped working and got a hell of a raise.
Wow. So you think that you could take everything the government does, like motor vehicle department? What else does the government do? The post office is pretty close to privatized already, right?
Yeah.
You could what else? Like snow plowing, you would privatize it? People would
liquor
pay?
Stores.
Yeah, it's up for bid. So there's it's simply like public works contracts where, you know, to streamline whether you get a building permit.
Some of these services are for the public. So, for example, snow plowing, say I refuse to participate, I won't pay my snow plowing bill, then are they just not going to plow in front of my house? Then how will anyone get down my street?
No. What I'm saying is the monies that are being appropriated to the government, instead of government employees, that the snow plowing for the year is up, that is up for bid, and a private company comes in and makes sure it's all done.
But then you make the government a middleman. Since when is having a middleman ever cheaper than not having a middleman? Maybe with government.
You
make public companies bid on doing government services. I got it. Okay. I got to run because I want to get everybody on real briefly, and we are running out of time. Pia in Arlington. Hi, Pia.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Good.
I would have Christine Gregoire lead by example and take a pay cut.
Ooh.
And the Senate and the House could jump in as well.
So have our government take a pay cut. That's a great idea, Pia. By the way, you're the first person I've ever met named Pia whose last name wasn't Zadora.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. Nice to meet you.
They did put a freeze on wage increases for all government employees, and I'm assuming that means the governor too. If they're going to freeze everybody in the federal or the state government pay raises, I'm hoping she can get one.
Mike in Tacoma, hello, Mike.
Hey, Bob. Hey, what I think they should do is if you're on welfare, you have to work to get welfare. I mean, you got a minimum wage job, okay?
I like this idea too. Like my son, you should be out working right now. You should be picking up the streets. Because you're on unemployment. Here you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. They should be making you pick up stuff, and then you'd get a job real quick, because you wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, on litter duty.
Make them do some work.
All right, I like that. Thank you. Ellen in North Bend, go ahead.
Good morning, Bob.
We're cutting the fat quickly.
They opened a new middle school up by your place this year, and the other two middle schools in our school district are open at half capacity this year.
Shut them down.
Shut one of them down, or use it for the overload from the high school.
Is that because we expected the housing boom and the influx of population to continue forever?
Yep.
I guess. I don't know. But two schools open at half capacity is a waste.
Thank you.
I think we could put those sex offenders at the middle school.
Right near my house. That's a great idea. Tom in Federal Way, hello.
Jungle Jim?
Hello.
Yes, Tom.
I'm just wondering why the state is going to pay that money to plow the North Cascades Highway up there out of Durrington or Arlington, when the snow can just melt away normally, or, you know, take a little longer to get through there. But why are we going to spend all that money and fuel to plow that highway?
Well, because when you plow the highway, business occurs and business makes money and state gets taxes on the business. If you shut down society, I think it's a great way. You got to watch that South Park episode.
Yeah, that road doesn't do much business, though. No truckers are going over that thing.
That's right, Joe. They don't do much business. We could wait another month for that to normally melt away. And
dude, that would melt. That wouldn't melt ever. It would never just normally melt away.
All right, Susie has this one. Susie, go ahead.
Good morning.
Yes, where do we cut the fat?
Yeah, a few years ago, I was given a disability parking tag due to a car accident. The tag was awesome; helped at a time for me to get around. But what was over the top was that I didn't have to pay for any parking. So I suggest that when people need a disability parking tag, that they pay for it, or they pay for the parking.
Disability stickers mean you don't pay?
If you have one of those placards that hang from your mirror, not only can you park anywhere you want, but you don't have to pay the pay and park meter thing.
But these are people who...
Not always.
When they're disabled and they're like using their hands to get around on that
rollerboard?
Rollerboard, they don't make a lot of money.
Yeah, but except there was a thing on the news last night.
They'll get us out of this economic. But you just roll fast.
I watched Channel 7 last night do an expose on parking scallywags. This guy parked his car every day for two. They watch this guy every day for 2 weeks. He works at the DMV. He's down at the licensing downtown. This guy would park and go into this thing and come out. And they said to him, "Hey, you know that you're not the 81-year-old woman that this tag is registered to." Guy says, "Oh, I'm just here today because I've been watching you every day for 2 weeks. That's not my car." He says, "Sir, we watched you get out of your car at 6:15 this morning. You come in at 5 o'clock this afternoon. That's not." I have nothing to say. And the guy, I mean, people are
like a 60-minute sting.
Yeah, they're totally beating the parking system.
I don't know if that's going to solve our economic crisis. All right, thank you. Big news over the weekend as the President of the United States showed a CEO to the door and gave him his walking papers. Seemed unprecedented in our history. I don't know if it is or not. In fact, I was reading everything I could last night. I'm reading articles and editorials, and I came in this morning and I said to Eric, I said, we got to get an expert on to talk about GM. Somebody who's, I read this amazing editorial last night. Somebody who's written a book maybe about GM. Somebody who knows the whole score there. Because I'm trying to figure out, what's the government trying to do? Are they trying to make GM go bankrupt? Do they know what they're doing? And so guess who we have on the phone? We have not only the author of the editorial, which I read last night, one of several, but he's also the author of a book called Why GM Matters, Inside the Race to Transform an American Icon. And he's William J. Holstein. Welcome to the Bob River Show. Hi, William. How you doing?
Yeah, Dennis, just Bill.
It's Bill. Oh, okay. Bill. Cool. This is so, like, this is good, because if you get to know people on a first name, you don't fire them as quickly, right?
Good point.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, I had a question for you. The first thing that came to my mind when I heard this weekend, and by the way, I'm, like most Americans and like a lot of people, I want to give the president lots of rope, and I if he takes bold action, and it has to be really bold to get real results, I'm going to back him. But I still have my BS detector goes off when he fires this guy, and I also wonder, if I have a problem with my transmission, am I going to bring it to the FDIC?
Well, let's take the last piece first. I mean, I think it's a joke to think that the federal government can guarantee the warranties of every GM Chrysler vehicle for the 5 to 10 years. Even if GM and Chrysler were to go into bankruptcy, go into liquidation, because there are thousands of parts in the car, and there are thousands of manufacturers who make them, the guys who make the screws and the bolts, but also, Microsoft sells into General Motors as well. So it's not just physical things, it's also software things. So how could the government make sure that hundreds of these suppliers survive and maintain inventories of these parts, and how would the parts get to the repair facilities, and so who would pay for all that? It's a monstrously complex, and to say that we stand by it it's just naive. They just don't understand the full complexity of it.
Right. Now, my sense of what's happening here, and it's been sort of hinted at before, is that we need fewer car companies. And my sense is that we're setting GM up to be the one that's basically that fails and is bankrupted, and a couple of lines survive and get bought by somebody else. And we're sort of being mentally prepared for that to happen. Would you? And I got that sense after reading your editorial, because it doesn't make sense that they would, like, get rid of Wagoner and bring in the guy who was going to be his successor anyway. That's not like real change or anything. It just feels like they're just making moves for political.
It's kind of an interim manager in baseball, just
right.
A guy to watch the field.
Watch the implosion.
Right.
What do you say to that?
Well, there's sheer politics involved in this. The Obama administration was on the receiving end for a huge outpouring of rage over the bonuses for AIG and over the treatment of some of the people in the financial sector. So when it came to the same time to make a decision about automotive sector, they said, well, we've got to be tougher and we've got to demonstrate that we're not pushovers. And so they applied a very different standard of treatment. The financial guys, they protected their friends, their pals in the investment banking world and private equity world, but when it came to the guys who make things and come from the Midwest and act and smell differently, they slammed him and they forced Rick Wagoner out. They humiliated him. They did not give him a graceful exit. They did not allow him to stay on the board. So there's a very different...
Saddam Hussein at least got a blindfold and one last cell phone call.
You're saying they fire Wagner because he smelled different?
Yeah. Well, so, he didn't have the right deodorant. No, so... So the Obama administration, they're saying that they want to maintain these companies, but the way they're intervening and the kind of tonality that they're creating around the companies and the kind of intervention that they're undertaking will make it very hard for them to
manage their way through.
So they're talking out of both sides of the mouth at the same time, which is quite a remarkable feat even in Washington.
I'm a Ford shareholder. I don't own a Ford vehicle, but I do have a little of their stock. And I thought it was interesting that Alan Mulally would keep saying, oh, we're good. We don't want in your money. But now maybe I know why. Is it because he wants to keep his job?
Well, it boils down to, in the year 2006, Ford mortgaged all their assets. So they borrowed $23 billion from the financial markets when the money was good. So they're sitting on that pile of money, which they're burning their way through.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Bill, because someone else has explained it to me that way. Ford is not in this predicament because of more or less of the timing of how and when they borrowed their money when it was cheap.
Right.
Eventually, Ford, if the recession continues, would also be in trouble.
Correct. And in terms of products, I mean, General Motors has a broader, newer, better product lineup. Ford has done well with Ford Fusion and the Ford Focus. But they're nowhere when with the Taurus and higher end vehicles. I mean, they're coming back with a new Taurus, but the GM has the Camaro hitting. They've got the Malibu out there. They've got the new the whole Cadillac lineup is outstanding. So General Motors has done a good job in terms of getting the product into the marketplace at the right price.
And Ford just this morning came out and saying that they'll make your car payments for you if you lose your job for 12 months if you buy a car between now and June. Is that PR, or is that really going to help them sell more cars, restructure?
Well, they're imitating the Hyundai Assurance Program,
right?
And they're the first ones who started this. And it has had the impact of helping Hyundai actually increase sales slightly. Mm-hmm. So that's the wave of the future, that the car companies are going to have to offer.
We're partners with you in
yes.
a sense.
Right.
All right, Bill,
right.
I want to ask you, so much I want to ask you, because clearly you're a guy who understands the car business. And let's be frank, most of us don't. Most of us understand our experience purchasing one. Most of us know a little bit about cars, but really it's mostly our experience. You've studied GM and how it's put together.
Right.
You've studied the auto business. Now, is it fair to say that they were short-sighted, that they mismanaged it, or is it just as fair to say that in the system that our country had and the way we made things back in the industrial age and moving into the modern age, that we were ill-equipped for the changes in technology and the changes in global trade, and that this is just something you could not have avoided?
Well, that's a rich and complex question. I mean, Toyota came up with a lean manufacturing method that was clearly better than anything the Americans had. The American mass manufacturing techniques invented by Henry Ford had been around for almost a century, and here came Toyota, here came the Japanese, and the Americans just couldn't believe that the Japanese had a superior method for making cars involving teams of people, involving the Andon cord that you can pull to stop the line, dramatically different relationship between management and labor. So for at least a decade, General Motors denied that Toyota had a better method.
So that part is bad management.
Well, it's a new model evolved, a completely new model evolved that...
It's not keeping up with the times. Okay.
That required General Motors to completely transform the way they manufacture cars.
But weren't some of the other problems the fact that we have unions and we had labor agreements, we had things already in place that cannot be undone and unwound without a company going bankrupt?
Well, you're right that they've been doing it. They've been driving down the cost of their cars. They will have taken $5,000 out of the cost of every vehicle by 2010, even without the most current round of givebacks and compromises, because they forced the union to take on responsibility for their health care costs.
Uh-huh.
And they forced the union to accept a two-tier wage system. I'm surprised at how many people don't know about this, but they're buying out. They're getting rid of all the guys making $28 an hour plus benefits, and they're replacing them with a new wave of workers coming in who are making $14.65 an hour.
Now, so the other side of the coin will say that the cars won't be made as well. Is there any truth to that argument?
Well, I think that, you know, in every factory, they are training and gearing up these people to make cars of the same quality. They're standardizing the processes that they use. I don't think that there's going to be a decline in the quality of the vehicles as they drive down the cost of the assembly.
In fact, automotive quality has just generally gotten better and better with innovations in technology, right?
Right, and GM had reached the point where recently, according to J.D. Power, Buick tied with Jaguar for number one in durability, beating out the Japanese manufacturers. So,
and you have some of that in your editorial, which people can read at NewYorkTimes.com, and that they were actually making some progress, and maybe Wagoner didn't need to be shown the door, and the fact that who they showed him the door for doesn't really signify any particular change, because this guy, it was his name Fritz, it was supposed to be next in line anyway.
Right. Well, here's the key question, which your earlier question sort of hit at. Did they fail? Did they make mistakes? Were they sitting on their backsides? Were they unaware of the world around them, and therefore they deserve to go down this path? Or were they working hard and headed in the right direction and then got ambushed by the sudden economic crisis brought to us by Wall Street? If you say they mismanaged themselves, then they deserve to be in this situation. If you say they were ambushed
by Wall Street, which is easy to understand, yeah.
Right, then they're victims, and they're not the villains of the story. They've been trying to do the good thing. They've been fighting the good fight.
Bill, did you like Bob's question?
Yeah, it was a good one.
That was a deluxe option package question from you. No additional charge for it. That's part of the base price of this interview. How about that?
That was fully loaded.
Yes, sir. We have everyone on the show wants to ask you something. Let's start with Eric. Eric, go ahead.
Bill, I've got to ask you about Chrysler, because there's this talk about Chrysler and Fiat merging, and I don't know if that's really the best fit, because Fiat really doesn't have a presence in the U.S.
I think that that's largely pie in the sky, that Fiat doesn't really want to take responsibility for Chrysler because, you know, the 60,000 workers and old factories and too many dealers and not a very good product lineup, not very good quality. Fiat is going to be reluctant to take responsibility for that. And so I think that the Cerberus, the people who own Chrysler, the private equity people, have largely created this mythology of Fiat as a way to guarantee that the federal government continues lending money, and so that Cerberus can make their exit and get their money and get out. So it's a pretty cynical game that they're playing. I don't really think it's real.
Speaking of cynical, kind of no matter what happens here, we're seeing a shrinking auto industry. We're seeing less dealers. We're seeing less jobs. We're seeing less pay for the jobs, no matter what, right? It's just it's the wave of the future. Your book, Why GM Matters, Inside the Race to Transform an American Icon, sounds like it was written the day before yesterday, but I'm sure it was written a little bit longer ago than that. When did you write that?
Well, I finished it last October and delivered it, and then all hell broke loose. So I had to obviously go back in November and December and update it after the Bush administration took their action. So, and my book publisher, to their great credit, rushed the book out. It was out in stores by the end of January. Official publication date was February 3rd. So this is one of the remarkable cases where a book is out and it's on the news. It's on the money as events are happening. Most books either come out too late or too early, and they're not really relevant in the way that this book is. I mean, I'm obviously the author and I'm biased, but the way this book has hit and the timing of it has just been spectacular.
Well, you're on it now. I mean, it's a top story all around the world, and I'm looking at this deal Maura just mentioned about Ford. It's amazing. They say you lose your job, and they will make your car payments for 12 months, except for radio guys and writers, because they aren't that crazy.
We're not trustworthy.
Exactly.
Did you send a copy of the book to the president, and in hindsight, do you wish you had?
Well, we didn't ask. We should have asked for our free copy.
Yeah.
William Holstein, Bill, I should say, in Westchester County, New York, thank you for your time. Fascinating stuff.
My pleasure.
We'll put a link to the book at our website, bobrivers.com. Eleanor Tiernan has appeared at both the Edinburgh, is that how you say it?
No,
Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Edinburgh. And Dublin Fringe Festivals.
Edinburgh being the huge one. That's a world-famous comedy festival.
Her comedy has been seen on Irish television and the BBC. No, she's not been on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno yet, but I think she's really funny, and I think it translates. It could work. I had the pleasure of catching Eleanor's stand-up act during our visit to Dublin and invited her to just come on and say hi with us this morning to debut her material for the United States of America on the other side of Atlantic. Live from Ireland, in Dublin, Eleanor Tiernan. Good morning, Eleanor.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
I am fine. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks very much for inviting me to be on the show.
Well, it is my pleasure. Now, did they tell you where I saw you perform?
They did, and I actually remember. I remember you, Bob, because it was quite a small show. You know, I only do shows, you know, where there's less than 20 people, so that I can remember everybody's face.
Sure,
nice.
In the audience. Yeah, yeah.
Good
so I, when I saw your website, I remembered who you were.
You did, because
on the right.
Because I was the American.
Sure, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You were drawn attention to a number of times throughout the night.
Yeah, I know. I was made fun of for a bit, and you did once. I can't remember what you said. Something about me being American. I can't remember what it was.
I might have done a joke because I'm quite interested in this phenomenon in America, this vagina rejuvenation thing that's going on.
The what?
Because
vagina rejuvenation.
Hold on, you guys understood that?
Absolutely.
The vagina monologue.
My ears perked up.
No, rejuvenation.
What is rejuvenation?
Well, it's basically an operation that a lady gets on her vagina in order to make it more appealing. I realize it's in the morning over there now, but it's quite serious. And that hasn't happened on this side of the Atlantic yet. And I suppose I'd be a bit worried for women who are going for that operation because I believe it won't work.
It won't work.
No, I don't, because I think if you think that a guy left you because you have a weak vagina, you're wrong. He left you because you asked him what he thought of your vagina.
Well put. Very well put.
That's sweet, Eleanor. Are you single?
I am single, yeah.
You are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Was that a link to the last bit of material I did?
Yeah, I'm just curious. Well, you're very charming. I would think you'd have a boyfriend or maybe a comedian friend. A lot of comedians go out with each other.
They do, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I used to go out with a comedian, but it kind of ran its course, you know.
The material got old.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, comedians are quite competitive, so if one person is funnier than the other person, well, at least that's why I say it didn't work.
How does it work for you being single and doing comedy? Would you ever date someone in the audience, or is that, you know, would that be fishing off the company pier or whatever they call it?
I'm kind of shy about that kind of thing, so I wouldn't normally go down that road. One second. I wouldn't go down that road because I'd be afraid that the person would have a different impression of me, that they might think I'm going to be like what, you know, I'm going to be on stage.
Right, you're going to be funny all the time, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So I wouldn't go down that road with the person.
Be a lot of pressure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So how...
But I love America.
You do love America.
I do, yeah, yeah. I was going to tell you about my first time. I went to New York a couple of years ago, and I went to see a friend of mine, and I hadn't seen him on his home turf before that. So I went to visit him in New York, and I arrived, and he started acting very strange. When I arrived, he wasn't there at the airport to meet me, and he started to kind of ask people for money when we were on the subway together. We went to restaurants, and he was eating food from other people's plates. And I kind of thought, you know, God, Americans are really strange. But it turned out he was bipolar, going through a manic episode. So I was being a bit unfair to the American people in that instance.
He wasn't a typical American.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this was the weirdest thing you said, and I don't know. I hope this will translate over the phone. But you said that you once considered for your comedy act buying a wheelchair and being a disabled comedian or something like that?
I didn't consider it. I went ahead and bought a wheelchair, Bob.
You bought the wheelchair.
I did, yeah. I thought it would be really funny when I was preparing a comedy show to come out on the stage in the wheelchair, tell my jokes, get lots of sympathy from the audience, get a big clap at the end, and then just get out of the wheelchair and walk off.
take a bow?
Yeah.
I'm cured! Your applause has cured me!
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But there was a problem with it. I bought the wheelchair on eBay, but before it arrived at my house, another comedian told me that Kurt Cobain had already done that joke. So I kind of lost interest in it, and that's 8 months ago when the economy was good, and now it's starting to look like it might have been quite a frivolous purchase, you know, that there might have been other people who could have gotten more use out of the wheelchair in the last 8 months. One such person might be the guy I outbid on eBay.
Poor guy. Yeah.
Yeah, Rick 23 is probably exhausted by now.
Now, did Kurt Cobain use a wheelchair on stage?
Different Kurt Cobain.
A different Kurt Cobain.
Is there a comedian named Kurt Cobain?
No, no, I mean like Nirvana.
From
Kurt
Nirvana?
Cobain, from Washington, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he did it at the Reading Festival in 1992. Ah. It's on YouTube, you can see it, yeah.
Ah, there's a little trivia about Seattle that we're getting schooled on from Dublin.
Yeah.
Huh?
Sure, yeah.
I love your city, by the way. It's gorgeous. And what fascinates us when we come over there is the history, the rich history. Like, I went to see the Book of Kells.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been there? Or does that only...
I have seen it, but I don't know. I think they make a lot of that up, you know, for Americans coming over to Ireland. I'm not sure it's all...
You think so?
It's not real.
It's a way to get 10 euros out of us, huh?
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I heard about a lot while I was in Ireland is that the recession is very global, and it has hit Ireland very bad. Someone told me that... it's bad in Ireland, but they're used to being poor, that they were not used to boom times, so it's not quite as startling. But are you being affected by the recession at all?
No, not particularly, because I've always been quite poor. In fact, it means I have more in common with my fellow man than I would in most times. It's a little bit untrue to say that we've always been poor. We were poor until about 1998, and then we got very rich for about 5 years. No, not 5 years.
Right.
11 years. Sorry.
Oh no. Until the crash this past year.
Well, we had a big boom in between, say, 1998 and 2009, and a lot of immigration happened to Ireland, which wouldn't have happened otherwise, which was really good for Dublin and other parts of the country. Like there was 1 week during the Celtic Tiger, we call it, where I got two taxis, and both times the taxi driver was black. I got into the second one. I said, "Well, is it yourself?" Well, it turns out it was two completely different black men.
Right.
They didn't even know each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be an experience in Ireland to see that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We haven't had that before, so it's great. It's adding color to our country, which we needed.
That's interesting. All right, now, Eleanor, I didn't ask how old you were. You look like maybe late 20s, maybe around that age of 30 or so, somewhere around there.
You're very kind to say that, Bob. I'm 32.
32. 32.
Should be 33. Bob loves that, by the way.
I love the 32. It's tree turdy. I like that. I think of Tweety Bird, how Tweety. I taught a putty cat would probably sound Irish.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. So you are out. Are you? And you're single, and you're out on the road of doing comedy, and you're touring a bunch of Europe, right? You're not just in Ireland.
I've done bits and pieces in the UK and a couple of gigs in the States as well.
Uh-huh. You have been here.
Yeah, I have. So I went to New York that time, and I've done some gigs in San Francisco as well. I'm a big fan of a Seattle comedian called Reggie Watts. Know him?
Reggie Watts, he's a guitar player, right?
He's a musician and comic, yeah.
Yeah.
He's getting quite a following over here in Ireland.
He's a great guitar player, I know that.
Eleanor, we got to get one of the local clubs to bring you here next time you come to the States.
I think you should, yeah. Can you put the word out?
We will most certainly keep up contact. Now, as a young female comic, how are you, are your parents proud of what you do? Do they come to your shows?
They do, but you know, Irish parents are quite difficult to impress. I would say, I could, you know, go over, break America. My mother would still think I was an incompetent fool. Hmm. Recently, I was staying in my grandmother's house with my mother, and the phone rang at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I wouldn't normally get up that early because I work nights, but it was my aunt calling from Australia. So I went down and answered the phone. And my mum arrived back from the shops, and she took the phone off me. And I know that my aunt said to her, "God, I'm really sorry for getting Eleanor out of bed," because my mum said, "Oh, no harm. So that one, she'd be in bed forever," you know.
Right. She'll just sleep all day.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's what she thinks I do.
Right. So now. You are. Where are you playing this weekend? We'll give them a plug in case anybody's going to Ireland.
the next gigs I'm going to be doing are in the Sugar Club on April 7th, and then in Killarney in Kerry on April the 12th.
All right.
You're from Athlone, is that right?
That's right. I'm from a town called Athlone in the middle of Ireland.
I've been there.
Yes. Have you really?
I have. We took a drive from Dublin to Galway, stopped in Athlone, had breakfast on the way to Galway, had dinner on the way back.
Sure. Well, I don't know for many of your Seattle listeners, the description I normally give of Athlone, like that feeling when you look into an old person's mouth first thing in the morning before they've put their teeth in.
Used to be great,
A feeling of disgust followed by guilt at your own lack of humanity.
That's right.
Well put.
Eleanor Tiernan in Dublin. Eleanor, we're going to link to you. I think you've got a MySpace page or something we can stick on our website, right?
Yeah, and if people want to, if they had any ideas about what I might do with my wheelchair, I'd be happy to have
them in
my space.
Hang on to it.
Very nice to meet you, Eleanor.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Take care. Let's go out to a movie. Early in the morning, rising to the street. me that Tyler likes this song. I like it too. That's sublime, right? Didn't that guy commit suicide? Yeah, bummer. Great talent. Okay, she's ready? Mia Tyler is a world-famous model, accomplished actress, clothing designer, author, and yes, the daughter of a classic rock superstar. Mia Tyler is also now the celebrity judge on a reality series that sounds like it could be a lot of fun. Pretty Wicked, it's called. I've seen promos for this. The Oxygen Network has it. It takes 10 beautiful, manipulative, shallow divas.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Which is funny because it's the opposite of you. And it transforms them to be as beautiful on the inside as they are on the outside. In other words, it's, well, it's like Biggest Loser, only lose your crazy, stupid attitude.
Exactly.
All right. And on the phone with us, the very lovely Mia, and I mean that, by the way, Mia Tyler. Welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the wonderful compliment.
Well, it's about to be undone by some of my co-hosts who are extremely misogynist. And you know what? They're fat and ugly, and they have a different standard for women than they have for themselves.
That's okay.
You run into that a lot, though.
To their own opinion.
Yeah. Thank you, Mia. I appreciate that honesty.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. You know, if I am fat, I am ugly, but if I don't balance that out with a very thin, attractive woman, look what I'm doing to the future of this planet. I care about the others. I don't. It's not about me, Bob.
Yeah.
If that's what you like, then more power to you.
Hey, look, I think she's unflappable.
Well, you know, if that's what you like, that's what you like. I can't sit here and say otherwise. Everyone's cool. Entitled to their own opinion.
That's cool.
I like big, husky men myself, so...
That's me. That's me.
Well, that's good.
I don't know. The husky is not a term they've used for me a lot, but big is.
I might as close.
Yeah, yeah. So so let's find out a little bit about you. By the way, my mom actually went out with your dad for 5 years, which is kind of weird.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I met her.
What's her name?
Hold on, not your mom.
My mom?
His wife.
Oh, did I say my mom?
Yeah.
Oh, that was really bad.
Boy, that's going to play back 200 times.
My wife, my lovely wife,
yeah.
Went out with Stephen for 5 years up in Sunapee, New Hampshire.
Oh, okay, that's where I'm from.
Yeah, Lisa Berdecki was her name.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I've followed the story of, you know, his life and his career, which is amazing, his sobriety and all of that, and his daughters who have both... show business is in your blood, isn't it?
Yes. We actually have another sister and another brother, but they're really young, so...
By the way, why I said that is because my son is here, and I think of Lisa as his mom. And that's why I said that. I'm trying to just get out of it.
Yeah, okay, backpedaler.
Okay. Anyway, back to you.
Okay.
So isn't New Hampshire beautiful?
I love New Hampshire. I plan on moving back again someday.
Right.
It's my favorite place in the world.
Really?
Yes.
Is that because no sales tax?
Absolutely. No, you know, I've been all over the world, and that's where I feel most at home and most comfortable, and I love New England and the vibe that you get from there, so
wow.
I'll be back one day.
So, Mia, was it difficult for you? You've obviously done very well. Was it difficult for you to grow up in the shadow of such fame and even with your very beautiful, I guess she's your half-sister, Liv, right?
Yeah, I don't call him half. We're all, you
your
know,
sister.
Blood is blood. Not at all. I mean, I've always been kind of the black sheep of the family anyways. I'm into the darker stuff. And so it was just kind of natural that I did my own thing. And, you know, I grew up with a great family where those lessons were taught that, you know, you do whatever you want to do and you be who you want to be. And so I really grew into myself, and everything that's happened to me in my life, it's made me who I am today, so I appreciate everything.
So you're comfortable with it all?
Yeah.
What do you think of these girls on the show?
You know, I went into the show thinking that I was going to be really, like, a hard ass with them and just kind of, you know, just break them down, and I actually ended up not having to. The whole purpose of the show is that we put them through challenges where they get to see the nastiness about themselves. So we're not just saying, you know, you guys are bad, this is what you do that's wrong, change it. We're actually showing them themselves, and they're figuring it out on their own, and whoever changes the most towards the end, you know, they win. We give them incentive of 50 grand, but, you know, you really start to grow attached to these girls because you...
Now, do they know what you're doing, or are they tricked into seeing themselves? The promos I saw made it seem like they were sort of thinking they were going on beauty, but not inner beauty.
Well, that's what we said, you know. We're doing this show, and we want you to be, you know, Hollywood's next It Girl. And in their interviews, we never got anything out of them. They put it all out there themselves, and so they just started talking about some of the nasty stuff and the nasty things that they do. One girl has a sugar daddy that's really old, and just all the backstabbing and just the nasty, just gross stuff that they do. And but they offered it on their own, so we never really had to trick them. And
right.
The only thing is, yeah, they came to the show thinking they were going to be Hollywood's It Girls, but they figured out on their own that they're all kind of nasty because they pick up on the, you know, each other's vibes and what they're saying. And then, but we do. We give them these really great challenges. The first challenge, we, you know, there's no mirrors in the house because they're all used to using their looks to get by in life. And so we thought, let's just take the mirrors out and see how they react to that.
Wow, no mirrors?
Yeah, no mirrors.
And how long does it take to, how long does it take them to figure out? Because, like, do they run around freaking out looking for a mirror to look at themselves?
Yeah. That's, oh, yeah. Funny. And instantly they start figuring
where's the mirror?
Out. Yeah. I mean, they're using toaster ovens. You know, they have their own little compact.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah. They're, like, looking at the reflection of the stove, and it's pretty funny. But the first challenge, we tell them, you know, you're having a party. All these guys are going to come. You're going to have to entertain them. And whoever entertains and does the best job wins immunity for the elimination. And so when all the men show up, all the men are actually in real life blind. And so these girls have to use their intellect as opposed to their
wow.
Look.
That's a blind date.
Over. Yeah.
That's a play on that word, isn't it?
Exactly. Funny. And so, you know, we try to put them through challenges because it is a reality show, so there's going to be that cattiness. There's a lot of fights. You know, one girl tries to start stuff with me, and it's just, you know, it's there's a lot of that fun stuff that you see on reality shows, but then there's also stuff that, you know, we're teaching people and we're teaching women, and I think people that tune in to watch a show are going to take a lot from it. It was right. Good therapy for me, and I think it's going to be good therapy for anybody that watches
now,
it.
I want to ask you about the plus-size model career. Because
okay.
That's gone really well for you, right?
Yes, very well.
How do you break into that? I imagine it would be very hard because there's lots of plus-size people, and most of them don't even think of themselves as models. What skills do you need other than being plus-size?
Well, you know, I'm a tomboy, and I was really never into makeup and fashion and all that kind of stuff, and I had no idea there was even plus-size modeling. So when I was approached to do it, I did it based on the terms that the photographer had shot my mom when she was 19, and so I was 19 at the time, and I thought that was a really cool thing to do, shoot, you know, with the same photographer. And then in the process of doing this ad campaign, you know, agents came up to me and offered me contracts, and I was just kind of like, F that, I don't want anything to do with this, you know. No. I'm a tomboy. I don't care about fashion. That's so stupid. And you know, a lot of money was thrown at me, and yeah. I wasn't, you know, I was 19, and so I was like, okay, this is a job. You mean I get to be myself and just kind of smile, and that's my job, and I get paid for that. So
you didn't have any like agenda of making people more comfortable with plus sizes. It was just like, hey, we'll pay you.
Well, at first it was the money, and then, you know, because I was, like I said, I was 19, so who's going to turn down, you know, 20 grand to do a photo shoot? That's ridiculous.
I would do it. Then, I would do it with an animal for that. I would do anything.
And then through the process of doing that, though, girls would start writing me, telling me that, you know, they were really grateful that I was actually putting myself out there and that I was becoming a role model, and that was what, you know, totally sparked my interest, and that's what kept me doing it, and that's what led me to, you know, I just launched my own clothing line. It's a plus line, and I'm just trying to do things for the people. You know, I'm trying to make everything as cheap as possible because I think it's ridiculous that people try to sell clothes for $200 when you can sell things for $30 and still make a profit. And so I just think that the people kind of need something. People need to be given some treats in life right now, especially the way the world's going.
Right.
I would just, you know, especially plus size women, I want them to feel comfortable and happy again and really embrace their size. And so if I can make clothes that's going to help them feel better about themselves right. at a cheaper price, that's made really well, that's for them, you know, that to me at the end of the day, helping people and making people feel better, that's what keeps me going.
When you do the plus size modeling, do they put pressure on you not to be thin? Do they say, you know, don't lose it?
Hey, you've lost some weight, you're going to lose the job.
No, I mean, they know what size I am coming into it, but there was a time when I was losing weight, and my agents at the time, I think they, you know, they were taking me out to dinner every night trying to fat me.
Having a milkshake, yeah.
All right, yeah. Mia Tyler in New York. A pleasure talking to you. You're very nice. Thank you very much for coming
up. You guys are wonderful.
All right, be well, Mia.